Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews. We're like a book club for people hate reading. This month we're doing Robin Williams comedies, so James picked the movie The Birdcage, my 1996. We bring you movie news, and we also talk about Firefly Episode 11. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, Ryan Preston.
And the old guy's here.
So who has the description?
Well, I said I'd give this one a go. It's a tongue twister. Thank you, IMDb. A gay cabaret owner and his drag queen companion agreed to put up a false straight front so that their son can introduce them to his fiancée's right-wing moralistic parents.
This movie totally reminded me of a gay Odd Couple meets the Falkers.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually not half bad.
Yeah.
So, sure. I was looking at Robin Williams, and it looks like all I had to do was just shave everything except for the mustache, and then bam, I'm gay.
Yeah, basically.
Actually, isn't that what he did?
He looks straighter.
I know.
He looks so damn straight, it was funny.
Can you believe that Nathan Lane's character was actually supposed to be played by Steve Martin?
Yeah.
I don't think Steve Martin would have done as well.
No. And Robin Williams was playing Nathan
Lane. Else other than Nathan Lane doing
it. Yeah, and Nathan Lane's character, Armand or whatever.
No, that's Robin Williams.
Robin Williams. Yeah. Robin Williams wanted to play a character less flamboyant or eccentric, so he switched roles.
Oh, with Nathan Lane.
Well, he asked the director. I don't think Nathan Lane was cast at the time.
No, that's what happened.
A good combination. Nathan Lane is a hell of an actor.
What ended up happening is when Steve Martin dropped out, he switched. He basically went to the director and said, I'd like to play a character that's not as ridiculous. I'm assuming because he usually plays over-the-top characters. He wanted to play something that was a little more softer.
Yeah, it was strange kind of seeing him as the tame one of the group. I mean, Nathan Lane... almost steals the whole movie.
From Robin Williams. He pretty much does.
It's so good.
I actually don't think Robin Williams would have played Nathan Lane's character good because Robin Williams is wacky, and Nathan Lane's character is really believable.
And really mopey.
Yeah, and I don't think he played it as he didn't play it as wacky as Robin Williams would.
Yeah, he wouldn't have played it as believable.
Yeah.
You know, I have to give a lot of credit to all these guys who actually the casting director or the casting person who picked Christine Baranski and I mean Hank Azaria, even Calista Flockhart played a really good role, and I think even Dan Futterman and Diane West, just Gene Hackman. I mean, they fit the role.
You know, Hank Azaria he was so stepped out of his actual normal.
Well, he wasn't being drawn.
Yeah.
That's
pretty amazing.
Well, if nobody knows, he actually plays a good portion of the Simpsons voices.
Yes, yeah.
So, everything except for the mains. But anyway, Hank Azaria playing Agador Spartacus.
I want your job, Hank. I want that job.
My favorite thing is you're reading about where he came up with the voice. And I've heard a couple of different versions over the years. He was in an interview. I think he said he was making him sound like the quote-unquote, his words, the queens from his neighborhood. And another one I read was talking about he turned out after watching it sounds like my grandmother.
Yeah, that's what he said. But, you know, and you really can't believe the things that he says, because he just jokes around constantly.
It's unreal.
Yeah, so
everything's a joke.
I do love the shoe bit about later on in the movie. He's like, I don't wear shoes. They make me fall over.
Yeah.
And a couple of scenes later, he opens the door, just whack, and they're all like, are you okay?
Yeah, and Robin Williams actually, in one of the scenes, he actually fell on accident, and they kept it in. The interesting thing to me is all of Nathan Lane's scenes and all of Robin Williams' scenes were filmed twice.
Mm-hmm.
Every last one of them was filmed twice. Right. Once where they stuck to the script, and once where they just sat there and just had a ball with it. And I really wish I knew.
Which ones were which?
I'm actually surprised they never came out with a, because it'd be perfect for marketing. You know, call it the Birdcage, you know, like scripted. You know, call it the Birdcage unscripted. You know, have like both versions of it. I think it would be pretty funny to do.
It would be, especially because I think Hank Azaria.
On a DVD nowadays, just have, you know, 4 hours worth of extra features.
Well, they can
just watch both of those.
They can use the unused angle feature in all the DVD players.
I think it's probably going to be a real good mixture of both because the writing was so good if you just look at every other character. I mean, luckily they had people like Nathan Lane, Robin Williams, and Hank Azaria who could just kind of keep riffing on what they were doing.
Right.
But, yeah.
All the characters and the story was so fleshed out that it was written really terrifically also, you know.
What yeah, like when the senator's guy died and the black girl's there and she goes, well, you know, he looked okay, so I just kept on going. You know, I mean, that written into this type of film... I mean, Ryan's right. The writing is so funny.
Yeah. The thing that actually surprised me is the fact that how tame this movie really is considering how they could have made it.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think makes it a much more believable, a better movie. I think it just makes everything a lot better.
I mean, I haven't watched this movie since it came out, and this movie's, what, 18 years old now?
Yeah, 96. Something like that, yeah. I actually saw this in the theaters.
And I did, too, but that was the last time I saw it. And, that plate scene...
The bowl scene has
always stuck out in my mind as just the funniest thing. You don't look at the plates? They're just Greek boys playing around.
I love the scene in the kitchen. I think it was following that. We better hear up before they get to the bottom of the bowl. Yes. My favorite part of this movie is, I guess it's kind of like Tropic Thunder with Robert Downey Jr. You had, you know, one straight guy playing a gay guy and then trying to be a straight guy. And Nathan Lane, whose characters are always amazing anyways and random.
Right.
So he's kind of, you know.
He's walking a fine line there. He's
very fine.
He does.
He's such a theatrical person that when you see him in movies, I think it's almost always in a musical, like The Producers.
He's over the top. He's over the top. Yeah.
I can see why he's really good on stage versus on camera.
Perfect role for him to play, that he can be that kind of the prima donna sort of that over the top character.
Yeah.
And still have it be part of himself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like you said, I love that sort of Inception, him playing himself, playing another guy. And then playing the woman was amazing.
Yeah.
That was the part I always thought was random. It's like, whoa, did not expect that.
I mean, well, just did anybody else notice that woman had a 5 o'clock shadow?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Well, I think the thing about Nathan Lane is if you watch any of the movies that he's really, really done well in, and that's The Producers and this one that really come to mind, he always, the role that he's playing, he's so much larger than that role, just his character and his persona and the way he carries himself and the way he delivers his lines, that you can just tell that this guy has a lot to give to the screen. And I think he's always been bigger than a screen. That's why he doesn't do
well. Yeah, I mean, he's movies. He's mostly from theater, like legit theater. And I mean, so is Robin Williams. I mean, coming from Juilliard, it's performing arts school, he did all that sort of big, grandiose, you know, Shakespeare in the Park kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is, I think Robin Williams could be described as controlled chaos. I think Nathan Lane is just, you know, controlled, as it were. I think that's one of the reasons he did really well on this role, is I think Robin Williams would have just kept going and the director would have been crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a funny movie, and I think half of it is due to good writing. The other half is just them two being able to bounce off each other so well.
Do you know what?
The chemistry that they had was something else.
How would you like to be Gene Hackman in this movie with those two guys?
I don't know how he didn't laugh. The only question I was thinking,
I'm sure
is,
he did.
Well, I mean, how, like, every scene. I'm surprised there's not, like, 1,000 takes. The only thing I was thinking of is, you know, this movie, I think, especially for the time, wasn't, like, very slapsticky. It had comedy bits, but it was more like a character-driven comedy.
Yeah.
And there's something else that I can't...
All of the bigger bits seemed to work because it was the setting that sort of made all those things possible. You know, Hank Azaria's character being so freaking bizarre. I mean, everybody works in a drag club and dresses up like insane characters, like everybody's in a David Bowie concert. You know, but so those kinds of big sort of over the top jokes almost seem to land in the perfect spot, you know, just given the setting.
Well, I was trying to think what else it is besides the character driven, because I know it's very character driven, but there was something else there and I just couldn't really figure out what else there was.
What are you trying to talk about?
Some story.
What was that? I didn't hear you.
At the heart of it, it's a good father-son story.
True. Oh, and it's also a love story, too. Well, if you think about it, between Nathan Lane and Robin Williams' character, because every time something happens, Robin Williams' son saying it would be better if you weren't here, and Nathan Lane's character runs out of the building.
Yeah.
You see Robin Williams run after him, you know, and basically say, this is what happened. You know, I love you.
Well, the thing that I liked about this movie is that it really did come into the fact of don't pretend to be somebody else. Really don't.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're really going to marry somebody, marry them for real. Don't marry them just for this. And that's kind of where it ended up as, where Calista Flockhart turns around and kind of walks out the door. But you still see them get married during the credits. Yeah, a few people just turn the movie off right when the credits started. You're an idiot.
Well, Robin Williams actually even says that beginning in the movie about, it took me 20 years to figure out where I am.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, kind of the whole... you know, describing the whole movie, the tagline, if you were, not exactly what I'm looking for,
and
but
the
describes
one,
it.
The one thing I would say is kind of was disappointing, but I think she played it so well, is Diane West. Diane West just played that innocent mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what she played all throughout the 90s and 80s.
Yeah, she was the perfect choice for that.
Yeah.
And she played that.
Even looking at it from now, you still watch it, and she still just strikes you as that person.
Yeah, you look at her as the mom, and you just look at her and you go, yep. But she fits. I like her.
Yeah, not even just because that's all she's ever played, just because that's what she just strikes as.
But every time I see her, it's like, man, she just looks like she should have a Minnesotan accent in this movie. That's the type of character.
She's been in Fargo. And,
right? Was I the only one that enjoyed the little Leno bit?
Oh, I loved it.
I loved it.
I was looking at him like, oh, he still had dark in there.
Look how young he looked in there. Oh, I know.
And here's another, you know, yeah.
It was good.
And we lost Ryan for a moment. But anyways,
Mark Culling Orson.
I really got to say, I enjoyed the casting. And the reason why I picked this one is because it was one of his really great comedies that not everybody goes to. And that's why I wanted to do it, because this was such a great film where he was able to do kind of more of his, I guess, stiff shirt roles, not so much jumping around.
I was going to say, for lack of a better term, he played the straight man in this.
Yeah.
In this movie, which I actually really liked. I liked the fact that he was playing off of somebody and very subdued. And I actually thought he did amazingly well at that.
He did.
You know, I think, you know, what this movie also brought at this period of time was some tolerance.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, we were still very, very struggling. We're still struggling with
it
to a certain degree. But back then, the tolerance of two gay men living together and being as flamboyant as Nathan Lane was, and as stoic as Robin Williams was in this movie, the two loved each other, and you felt the love between them. And then they produce a son, metaphorically.
Yeah.
You know.
But they raise a child.
And he turns out to be such a good guy. I mean, he called them his parents. He loved them, you know, and he turns out straight. And so it was, you know, it was very good for that period of time.
Oh, no, for that period of time, it was amazing, the fact that not only they got away with that character.
I think I had some points on what you're talking about. The thing about this movie, like you're saying, is it was not so much just a in-your-face tolerance movie. Mm-hmm. It was a subtle tolerance movie that came in a way that said, hey, guys, you know, we're not these crazy off-the-wall people that you think we are, like Nathan Lane's character is. We're actually human beings. And this one, I was trying to look it up, but I think they grossed like $80 million opening week, which was the biggest that they'd ever done for a gay movie.
I said it earlier, but I think one of the reasons this played so well is because it was a...
For openly gay movie.
Well, but I think one of the reasons it played so well because it was a love story. Exactly. It was a father and son comedy. Yeah. It was a comedy between two people trying to get married. I think all of that really played well, that everybody's like, oh, I know people like that. Oh, totally. You know, so I just, I thought this whole movie was very tastefully done.
Yes,
I
agree.
It was done very well.
And
I'm actually surprised they never did a sequel of some sort.
I think it was just one of those that...
It'd be hard to do.
Yeah, it would be hard to do, and I don't think it made as much as they would if it was a sequel.
I don't disagree, but I mean, in the era of Hollywood sequels, I'm surprised it's never come up. I mean, Birdcage 2 and some sort
there
of...
There probably will be one in 5 years. Give it a chance.
Well, we know who's not going to be in it.
And
way to kill the mood there.
Jeez. Oh, is this still early? Too early for my joke that you guys censored?
not anymore.
Sorry.
Old guy just made a suicide joke.
The biggest thing I was going to point out, hey, I've made some too. The 6.9 rating on IMDb, that is one that shocks me.
Yeah, it is a lot lower.
It is really a lot lower than I think it deserves.
So I'm
well. When you go to users' reviews, though, they give it a 10.
Yeah.
So with that being same, James said, what would you give it?
You know, I give this one actually a 4 out of 5. I don't think it was one that just knocked me out of the park, but you know, I don't think it's one that should be passed up. I think it's one that people should see. People should get into. Not really get into, but to see that Robin Williams had this in his repertoire.
No, see, I think this is an easy movie that you could get into. I mean, I agree totally. I think this movie's a 4 out of 5. And to me, it's almost on the verge of 5 out of 5, just because how amazingly well done the script, the acting, the interaction between Nathan Lane and Robin Williams, which Robin Williams plays well against almost anybody, but the chemistry between those two are absolutely outstanding.
Yes.
And every scene they were in completely stole it. So for me, it's a solid 4 out of 5.
Yeah, and I actually found the stats. It was 18.3 million, which was a lot of money for 96.
Was that the whole
Yeah, the highest weekend opening gross with an openly gay character in the lead until Bruno in 2009.
That's interesting.
Excuse me, so the opening was 18?
Yeah, the opening weekend.
Wow. So what do you give it?
Assuming you mean me.
Yeah, the old guy. Well,
what do you get?
Well, Ryan's back, so I guess we'll
I assume the couple of things that I really loved about the movie. I love the character development. I think it was great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys played off of each other as well. I don't know who the casting director was in this, but whoever did the casting did a fantastic job.
Shouldn't have won an award just for the casting.
Yeah,
I had a few issues with cinematography in some of this. There were some scenes in there I think that were probably could have been improved on as far as that part goes. I did love, however, looking at the period phones.
Yeah.
You know, the almost the big brick phone and some of the big phones. I enjoyed looking at some of the stuff. But with all of that said, I definitely say this is a 4.
Yeah.
I was going to also add, I loved the intro when it flew up to the birdcage.
And that scene was...
Did
you
well
read
done.
How they did that scene? Yeah. That it was like took three different cameras, angles and cameras and.
Oh yeah.
So Ryan.
It looks like are we unanimous already on 4 out of 4?
Looks like
apparently
it.
So. Wow.
Okay. I mean, yeah. That's going to be the case, man. It's I think I'm going to slightly disagree with James in as much as I think this movie's really right up Robin Williams' alley. I think he had a great time and didn't think real hard about wanting to do this one.
Well, I think what we said when you were trying to connect was...
Yeah, yeah, I think he came in at the end, yeah.
One of the things we said for Robin Williams playing, you know, kind of the stiff character, the straight man, and character-wise was... We really liked because it was something you didn't get to see Robin Williams, who always played the more wacky characters. Was one of the things we said.
Yeah, definitely. This might be almost the perfect thing for him. You know, in as much as you really get every single bit of why everybody liked Robin Williams.
Yeah,
and I really wish he played more characters like this. I mean, it was almost a shame that he got typecasted into such a wacky roles. Next, we're going to switch up to Firefly. I'm going to, you know, switch it over to James.
Oh, I'm going to be doing this one?
Yeah, that's somebody else wants to volunteer. Ryan, do you want to go?
As we're talking about the episode Trash.
Heart of Gold.
Heart of Gold, the horror episode.
Yes.
Are you watching, are you doing what IMDb is telling you to do?
You know what fucking websites I went to try to figure out which episode this was.
Netflix.
You ever heard of Netflix?
No, I'm not going by Netflix anymore because it screwed me last time. There's like four different versions of what episode 11 is supposed to be.
So, ladies and gentlemen, what we've got to do now is we're going to have to do our homework and figure out what you want us to write. So, you know, all
so Heart of Gold is the one we watched.
Episode 11 was the episode trash.
Well, we're going to go with James.
Yeah, because that's what the three of us watched.
So you've been outvoted.
Say, maybe next time, say the episode's name.
That's what I've been trying to do the whole time, but nobody does their homework.
I can't remember. So this one's called The Heart of Gold?
Heart of Gold. This is the one where the companion, I can never remember her name, got a distress signal from a good former companion about somebody trying to kill one of her whorehouse members. So Mal and their ragtag bunch of people come to save the women of ill repute. Yes.
I love this episode to death.
I have one thing to say about this episode.
What's that?
Just one simple thing.
Yes.
Now, there is nothing worse than a jealous, crying whore.
Wow. Talk about kicking into high gear.
Yeah, that is all I have to say about this episode.
Was her first time coming out and actually... You know, it was almost like admitting that she's got feelings for Mal.
But she's not a whore. She's a companion.
So does Mal get to go and cry every time she puts some guy's member in her mouth?
She's a companion, not a whore.
I'm not sure I appreciate the negative connotations towards whores.
I mean, come on, that's Ryan's other part-time job.
Hey, some of my best friends are whores.
There you go.
Well, considering where you live,
I'm not going to make any comment on any of that.
I'm not kidding. Some of my best friends are whores.
Is that why you're still friends with them?
Okay, well, skipping on. Let's start.
Oh, let's back to the episode.
So, one of the things I liked about this movie was the charging battle scene when they were all locked up in the horror house and you had that guy with that belt-fed machine gun on top of that. Flying thing that looked like a Star Wars ripoff.
Star Wars?
Speeder? It looked like a Star Wars ripoff.
It did. It really did.
It was.
There was no Vaseline at the bottom like the theatrical release had, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Anyways, that was kind of amusing. There were some amusing parts in this one, but, you know, the whole thing just got ruined by the crying whore.
I actually really liked this whole episode, including the episode with the companion who was crying.
I tell you, my favorite part was that guy with the laser gun when he ran and let us check batteries. I thought that was perfect. Got a fancy laser gun. You get five shots off.
Looks like we're keeping Ryan awake. I mean,
he's probably trying to look up news. No, it's my turn.
Yeah, I was looking down.
It's okay. Asleep. I was trying to find something.
It's been a long day for
that. I lost that I had saved. But anyways.
So I want to ask you, how many episodes does Firefly have?
I think it's only two now.
14. So we're coming close to watching Serenity, which is the Firefly movie. And I'm going to make sure everybody here stays tuned to the episode where we give the entire 20, 30 minutes to talk about what we think of Firefly.
So Netflix says 11 is what?
Netflix. Oops. I hit the wrong thing.
Technically, we're on 12.
I hit the wrong button.
Okay. Well, all right. 12.
Yes, we're on 12.
And it's called. That's what we're trying to find out. Everybody's hitting Netflix. We're going to crash Netflix.
There we go. Okay. Sorry. So, episode 12 is Objects in Space. Now, Ryan, trash is number 13.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it depends on who you go by, so
we're going by Netflix.
I'm going by the Firefly wiki page.
No.
Nope, that's cute. We're going by Netflix.
The date that it came out, the actual episode, name of the episode.
See, now you're going by what Fox screwed up. So we're not going by what Josh Whedon actually meant for it to do. Next week is Objects in Space, number 12.
Sorry to say this, Ryan. You've been voted off the island, so you're going to have to go by what we say for the first time.
Obviously, I have no choice.
Yes. Well, you can still watch the wrong episode. I mean, so we're going to switch off to movie news, and I think this week it's James's turn.
You mean we're smoking dog shit, man?
Beep.
Well, that was inappropriate.
Yeah, I wouldn't beep you. So we've all seen the trailer for, what is it, episode 7 of Star Wars?
Yeah.
Yes.
Shut your hole. So yeah, anyways,
we do a movie review show, and he refuses to watch stuff that's part of
until it comes out. But the only thing I was going to say is there were some people asking George Lucas what he thought about this one. And you know what his comment is?
What?
I know nothing about it.
You know, I wouldn't.
I think he's going by what Brian's going by. He wants to be surprised and see what J.J. Abrams can do with it.
You know, I'll be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually knew something, considering he wrote the entire universe. But yeah. I actually like the fact that he's refusing the answer, because this time he's not going to get yelled at by thousands of angry geeks about how he screwed up the universe.
And okay, so who here has watched the new Godzilla?
I have.
The most recent one.
I did.
You didn't?
Yeah, totally.
I didn't get a chance.
I absolutely loved it.
Japan got so pissed off at it that they're going to be doing another one in 2016.
I can't wait to see their version, but I still like the American one. I don't care what they say he was cuddly.
I
can't see that at all. How the hell is that monster cuddly?
Well, the main complaint I saw, it was cuddly. It didn't look like the traditional Godzilla. And
it was like 100 stories tall.
The thing I actually liked about it is I actually thought it was really tasteful to the original while making it ours. It was so much better than the Matthew Broderick Godzilla.
Oh my god, that was a joke.
Like this one is just, if you guys want to watch it, you know, go watch the Godzilla 2000, I think that was what it was called, with Matthew Broderick, and watch the new one.
Watch it
and see the reason why the new one is so much better.
Well,
the new one's good just on its own, for the record.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, the quote that I have from the producer, Tiachi Ueda, probably mispronounced his last name, whatever.
Close enough.
The time has come for Japan to make a film that will not lose to Hollywood. And he's actually part of Toho Studios.
Japanese are still at war with us. The war is over, dude.
I know.
but as far, I did read something about how they lost interest in Godzilla movies. That's the reason there hasn't been one since, I think, 2001.
Well, it was a generational thing. I mean, it was really social commentary after the whole bomb-dropping thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, it just kind of outlived its audience.
And this guy, you know, I don't know any of his films. I've only found three that he's done. Two are in 2014 and one was in 2013. That he just produced an executive producer, but I don't see anything that he's actually done. So,
well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'll totally watch it. I'd love to see.
I want
to
see Japan's rebuttal to our Godzilla.
I'll be honest. Sure. I don't want to see it.
Japanese Godzilla all along. Had they made one sort of recently with today's technology?
Yeah,
we'll take the challenge on. What the hell?
I just don't want to see the cuddly Godzilla. I like, even though I have to admit this one was a little cuddly, but still had kind of like, I'm a 100-foot
I
want to
see
monster.
Like him go up against King Kong.
Maybe they take Godzilla to Jurassic Park. There's a thought.
That's it. Godzilla versus T-Rex.
Well, didn't we kind of do that with King Kong when he was fighting the dinosaurs or something in the original King Throne?
In the first King Kong, and he fought a T-Rex.
Yeah, but there was other dinosaurs.
Oh,
around, too.
Yeah. You're talking about Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm talking about the black and white old King Kong.
It's been a while, apparently, since I've seen that movie.
Fighting a dinosaur in that one.
Yeah, he fought a dinosaur.
So, do you have any more movie news? Let's skip ahead.
No, that was
because the old guy apparently is getting cranky.
Clock's running.
So, Ryan, do you have any movie news?
Do we need to cover that much?
Wondering. We still have a few more minutes. So with that being said, Ryan, what are you picking for next week's movie?
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Well, I don't know. It was kind of a choice, but I think I'm going to have to lay with my original choice of
Aladdin.
Yep. Disney's Aladdin, right?
No. Prince of the Forty Beats.
I'm sorry, Rob totally just cut you off.
Okay.
What did you say?
Try that again.
I'm not sure it matters anymore.
Aladdin.
No, he was talking crap to John about something about Prince of the 40 Thieves or some
which,
shit.
Which, by the way, is, I think, the third one. So.
I watched the first one.
What are we watching?
Yeah.
Aladdin.
We are watching Aladdin.
Is starring in.
Why are we watching Aladdin?
Because he picked Aladdin.
This is an awesome movie.
Okay.
See, the old guy doesn't like.
He doesn't want to watch cartoons.
Well, see, he doesn't like cartoons. He doesn't like movies with subtitles.
Song singing.
Yeah, then, you know.
Okay, no problem.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope there's ladies out there. I gave The Birdcage a 4 to 5. James gave it a 4 to 5. Ryan gave it a 4 to 5. And Rob gave it a 4 to 5. One of the few times all of us, especially this cranky bastard, agrees. Next week is Aladdin by Disney.
And
as always.
By Disney?
And?
I was waiting for you to say it, I guess.
Well, I'm pointing at you, bastard.
And at episode 13.
No.
Wait, 12. See, he's got me all screwed up now.
He's all flustered.
Blame it on episode me, right? 12, not you. Let's point out the greasy guy. Episode 12 of Firefly. Look at it on Netflix.
And
N-E-T-F-L-I-X.
That's proof he can spell. And as always, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye, lardass.